time to listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 to 12 by Island, stockist of Waiheke's biggest range of local gifts, craft and clothing. You'll find them on Ocean View Road, Oniroa. Last Saturday, Jan Scott talked to Colin Bearden about the UNESCO Reserve proposal, Di Stoddard from Waiheke Library, Don Robertson from the Hauraki Golf Charitable Trust, peace campaigner Joan Kirk and Dr. Margaret Karatai.
Now it's my pleasure to welcome Colin Bearden to the studio. Colin's going to talk to us about the eco project that he's promoting at the moment. Welcome, Colin.
Good morning.
Now tell us something about the about this proposal and its implications for Waiheke.
Okay, well the idea is a fairly simple one. It's that Waiheke should be put forward as an application to be recognised by UNESCO, which is a United Nations organisation, as a centre for sustainability. That's the main core of the idea. And that doesn't mean just sustainability in terms of the natural environment, but also our way of life here.
Right, so what would be the practical implications for Waiheke if we were to become under the UNESCO banner?
Well, I've got to say from the start, it's a long-term strategy. It's not something that's going to fix our problems immediately. But I think a lot of people at the moment feel that the agenda for the island is being set very much by Auckland City, and we don't have a large say in the kind of projects that go on here and the way that projects are run. And I think this would shift the balance back towards the island, because it would focus that the island is here for a particular programme of sustainability that's recognised internationally, and we would hope that the councils and the government would get behind that.
How would it impact on somebody, for instance, wanting to build a house? Would they have to go through more hoops than they do now?
I don't think so. At the moment, if we say in 12 months' time we're successful and the application went in and we got the bit of paper, say, in 12 months' time, it wouldn't be like what's going on in Samara. We're all suddenly driving on the other side of the road or something. We probably wouldn't notice anything from day one. But it would mean that as a community we could get together and decide on the major issues that we felt that were causing problems on our island. It might be to do with pollution. It might be to do with excessive types of building. It might be concerned with transport or tourism or whatever we consider to be our issues. And we would try and work out, as an island community, the most sustainable way of dealing with that problem. And that, I think, would then have a lot of influence on the other bodies, Auckland City and the government, into how they handle that.
Is there likely to be a cost involved to people on the island, to ratepayers and residents?
No, well, I was looking at the proposal that was put in from Mornington Peninsula, which is just outside Melbourne in Australia. And no, there was no cost. It's an organisation that's basically run by volunteers. It's like a trust that's set up to run it. So you would have something like a Biosphere Reserve Trust or a Sustainability Council or something on the island that would coordinate all those activities but have quite a lot of political clout.
So would that council or trust take the place of the community board?
No, it wouldn't, no. Because the community board is part of the formal structure of government, and that would probably remain in place. Certainly initially it would remain in place. This would exist outside of the government. It would be a non-government organisation.
And it would be like an advisory board, would it, to the community?
Yes, but the thing is it delivers something, because if you get that status of being a biosphere reserve recognised by the UN, it is, you know, what the world body saying you are a very special place in the world. Now, in terms of New Zealand's image in general, in terms of Auckland's image, that's worth a lot. And so they're going to listen to what we say. If we say we're likely to lose that status because of something that's going on, that's going to carry quite a lot of clout, I think.
Right. Mm. And what is the criteria that we need to be recognised?
Well, a lot of it is describing what is special about the place that you are putting forward. So what is special about us? What special plants, animals, marine life have we got that we're trying to conserve? What policies have we got for trying to live in a sustainable way, both economically? You know, people have got to make a living, and are they making livings? Are they trying to improve that to lessen the impact on the environment and changes to our way of life and so on? So we just have to write a case, really, to say that what we're doing now, what we want to do in the future, the way we're going in the future, is going in that direction. And once we're set up, then we have to improve year by year.
Right. Mm. And what is your vision for the future? How could you, if we did get this rating, then how would you see it? What would be your ideal outcome?
I think it's not my outcome. What I'm trying to do is to get the island to focus on a long-term future vision. And if they don't want this vision, well, that's fine. I think they should consider it, though. I really do think people should consider this as a long-term vision for the island. And I think if we can start to take control back onto the island of the way, the long-term strategy of where we want to go, and this is one suggestion, that we do it through this idea of sustainable economy and sustainable community and sustainable environment, and then we would be very much not just running our own affairs, but actually making the world a better place, you know, and setting an example for other places as to how communities and environments can work together under fairly pressured times and environments, and that we can. Yeah, I was looking at the site for Menorca, and they don't talk about fighting off problems. They talk about how do we make next year better than this year, you know, and that's the kind of thinking within biosphere reserves. How do we get up in the morning and think, how can we improve things?
You know? That's a good way to go, isn't it?
Yeah. Because there's a lot of people on the island that do that all the time. You know,
it can be a bit overwhelming if you've got a big vision and you think, now, how on earth do we get there? But if you take it little by little, day by day, and gradually it evolves, doesn't it?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's why at the moment we're just looking at the island and looking at the UNESCO documents and trying to get people to discuss it. And then we'll go through another phase of trying to get see whether the islanders really want to do it, and then we'll go to Auckland, and bit by bit we'll get there.
So the application to UNESCO, does that have to have the backing of the government or the Auckland City?
It has to come from the government, and I would think it would need the support of Auckland City, or at least tacit support, at least they wouldn't oppose it anyway.
So what are the practical steps we need to take from now on to get that application together?
Okay, well, I'm with a group of us that are sort of setting this in motion. We're going to be calling probably some workshops between now and Christmas to try and pull together really a kind of audit of what's going on at the moment. On one will probably be on the natural environment and what we're doing for conservation and why. The other will be on our way of life. What are the important aspects of that we're trying to preserve and enhance? And the third will probably be on issues of governance and legality. And from that, we hope to get a kind of document out probably in the new year, which kind of sums up where we think we're at the moment, that could form the basis of an application. From there, I think we would need to have some sign from the population of Waiheke that it supports this, because we don't want to do it on behalf of anybody. And whether that might be the elections next year, we'll just have to wait and see how we go on that.
That sounds like a useful exercise, whichever way it goes, so we know what we're doing and where we're going, where the gaps are, and perhaps the things that need addressing anyway. Now, your background, do you have a background in conservation or anything of this, or are you just interested?
No, I've organised a lot of things and been involved in lots of things in my life, but I mean, I just come to Waiheke and I love it, and I don't like the way it's being unpicked, really, and undermined in a kind of rather surreptitious way, that it's never done openly. It's always sort of being undermined, and the foundations are being slowly taken away. And I just feel I've got to put something back, really. That's what I feel I can put back.
Yeah. And what attracted you to this particular proposal?
Well, I suppose it started when the Royal Commission came out and it said, you know, our task is to make Auckland a world-class city. And I walked along Palm Beach to the lookout, and there were some visitors there. And they said, this is wonderful. You couldn't get a better place than this in the world. And I thought, there's a bit of a mismatch here. You know, we're supposed to be trying to make ourselves world-class, and these people are coming and saying we are world-class. And I was thinking, well, how can we persuade people that? How can we get some seal of approval that says we're world-class and leave us alone, you know? And that's really where the idea of UNESCO came from. I mean, other people had mentioned it, but that's where the idea came from. Initially, World Heritage, but we're not really a World Heritage site because that's like a pristine site in some way. But then I looked around at these other programs, and this one seemed to describe exactly what we are, really.
Yeah. Is this something that could be applied to New Zealand as a whole?
As a whole? I think it could apply to many other places in New Zealand. And I know that there's interest in Otago Peninsula also putting themselves forward, and there have been other areas, and I'm sure if it got going, I'm sure there would be many other areas that would be interested. I mean, Australia has 15 at the moment, and they're adding all the time. I think we were in Spain recently. They have about 45 there. You know, so I think it is something that, if it gets going, a lot of places would want to be as well, yeah.
And do you, what are the obligations of if we did get the status, what would our obligations be to UNESCO?
Well, we have to show how we're pursuing those aims. So we have to have kind of projects, quite innovative projects we're allowed to have to explore different ways of doing things, different ways of tackling with problems. We have an obligation to share that with the international community and to report on it. It doesn't necessarily mean going overseas, but we have to keep in touch and tell them what we're doing. And year by year, we're supposed to have the aim of improving our environment, not just maintaining it, but improving it.
Right. So what do you want Waihikians to do now?
I think just talk about it, just find out about it and talk about it. And it, we hope soon to have a website up where, yeah, there'll be documents that you can read and the outcome of these workshops. Come along to the workshops or just get in contact. And for the next 3 to 6 months, really consider it seriously and consider each individual how they feel about it. Are they comfortable with it? And if not, perhaps let us know and we perhaps talk it through. And it's still in the shape of formation. We can still form the application at this stage. So,
is there a group of you doing this, or you're doing it? Are you the sole?
Well, a group of people came forward after the select committee time, and that group organised the meeting last weekend, and the report back's there. And at that meeting, another group of people came forward volunteering to help writing the next stage. So we're now up to about 12, 15 actual helpers from a list of about 200 supporters at the moment. We're always welcome to have more people join. Yeah.
So how do people get in touch with you?
Okay, they can give me a ring on 5801, or they can email me on cbearden@ihug.co.nz.
That's B-E-A-R-D-O-N?
That's right.
Right. Well, do contact Colin and get him behind this. Sounds like a great way for Waiheke to go for the future. Thank you, Colin.
Thanks, Jan.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce Di from the Waiheke Public Library. Welcome, Di.
Good morning. I've run across the courtyard.
Good on you. I noticed you had a heck of a lot of people waiting to get in this morning. What was the attraction?
Yes, Saturday mornings is a bit like that. I think some of them think we open at 9 like during the week, but we open at 10, so they're piling up outside and there's children and mums and all sorts of people, and so they're almost banging on the door.
Isn't
so Saturday
great?
Mornings is one of our busiest mornings.
That's brilliant that it's being used so well.
Yeah, and we've had a busy week.
Yeah. We played a podcast earlier on in the program of participants in the Adult Learning Week, which has just concluded. Now, I presume there were activities going on in the library for that?
Yeah, Auckland City Libraries gets quite involved with Adult Learners Week and encourages each community library to hold workshops to, you know, just to inspire adults to try something new. So I make sure that we're quite heavily involved in that, and every day I have a different topic, and we, yeah, it's just, it's attracts a lot of interest in participants, and we've had ukuleles and native trees and bark flowers, and floristry. It's been really popular, and some people were quite sorry that they didn't know it was on, but it's hard to reach everybody in the community sometimes. But yes, so I already have plans for next year, for what we're going to be learning next year.
Oh, that's excellent.
And yes, I know, it's been a very busy, buzzy week over there.
Now, what have ukuleles got to do with books?
Well, it's Adult Learners Week, so it's about trying something new, and then we always support that with the books that are in the system, so they can either, you know, like borrow ukulele books and see the chords, and yeah, just enticing people to try something new, because it's always about lifelong learning, and the libraries are very involved in that, and as a place where you can go and get material to try something new and learn something new.
That's excellent. And also, of course, I've had personal experience of going into the library. I've heard something in the wee small hours in the morning on the radio, a book review or something, and I've wandered into the library and said, "Have you got it?" And sometimes they say, "No, we haven't got it, but we'll get it for you." And that's something that's really important, that you need to know that if the library doesn't have it in stock, they'll get it for you.
Yes, many times a week people come in and you know, they would like something and we don't have it in the system. And so there's a wonderful, wonderful place on the homepage of our website, AucklandCityLibraries.com. And on the top right-hand corner, there's a little picture of a person, and it's Ask a Librarian. And when you click on that, it gives you all sorts of choices of what you'd like to ask us. And one of them is suggest a purchase for us to buy. And you click on that, fill out the form, request it, and hey, bingo, more than likely they will buy it for the system if they feel like other people would also read it. Wonderful, wonderful way to get, you know, books into the system.
Mm, that's great. I remember once asking for a book that they had quite a lot of problems finding, because it was actually down in the dungeons of Auckland City Library.
In the basement.
And had been taken off the shelves, but hadn't quite been discarded. But they did manage to find it and resurrect it for me, so it was great.
There's a lot of books in the basement, and it's a couple of stories high, the basement. And it's interesting, it's encouraging to know that there's certain books that are out of print and that are still there, and it's like, wow, this topic's here or this title's here still. And so it's quite a treasure, you know, and of course every public library system has the basement where they can, you know, there's like an archival system down there. So, and all the New Zealand material, of course, is down there as well. A copy of each stays in the basement. So, yeah, wonderful place.
Yes, a real treasure trove,
I think.
It is. Now, tell us about some new books on the shelves over at the Waiheke Library.
Yeah, well, at the moment, there's masses of new books coming in, and one of my roles is to make sure that the junior part of the library has, you know, topics and subject matter that I feel it needs replenishing or it needs updating, and old things need to disappear and new things need to come on the shelf. So I'm quite active in making sure that the collection's up to date and looks fresh and that there's new topics. And with the publication area now, what's interesting with the, you know, the topics, say like the planet or certain animals, or, you know, including the global warming thing, or, you know, it's all, the books are always now including websites that you can go to, and very kind of user-friendly books and interactive. So I've been ordering a lot of those over, and when they come through, I'm really chuffed with all the different things that are coming through. So, you can spot new books on the shelf. They're usually shinier and cleaner and you know, the pages are whiter on the top. So, and we try and always display the new ones as well. But if you've got children that are going to, you know, that are studying either, you know, primary or secondary, you can just use our website, and you can refine your search so that you get the latest material. You know, so if you only want stuff that's been published this year, you just click on, you know, this year, and you end up with all the latest material and up-to-date nonfiction information at your fingertips. So, and lots of board books come through for the young ones, and picture books as well. And I'm particularly interested in the picture books, and I brought two over with me. One's a classic from 1963, I think, and which lots of people know about. And it's been republished yet again, yeah, 1963. And it's in its original illustration and original format. And it's called, lots of people will know, it's called The Three Robbers by Tommy Ingegura. But people will know it, I'm sure. But I love well-illustrated picture books, and the text needs to flow as well. And so I'm quite fussy in what I choose for my story times. You know, on Tuesdays and Thursdays we have a story time, because it needs to be the right length, the repetitive words, beautiful pictures that the children can kind of hook into.
What time is the story time?
10 o'clock on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Another popular
And what's the age time group do you aim
from
at?
Babies through to four. Yeah, but averaging around two, just a little bit under, about 2 years old,
That's great.
Yeah, and then, so one other picture book I got that's brand new that I've pinched first for story time is Woo Woo Goes the Train by Anne Rockwell. And in here, you know, once again, I like the illustration. It's not too confusing or too jumpy and erratic. The colours are lovely, and the text is repetitive. And, it's, you know, obviously boys will like it, but there's a repetitive, the noises are delightful to express, and you can see, and the pictures are clear enough for the children to, you know, understand. There's not, and there's colour, there's a lot of teaching in picture books, and there's colour and there's noises and there's railway tracks and, you know, lots of good adjectives. So, we've got a great selection of, you know, as parents know on the island, a great selection of picture books. And the thing is to, you know, there was a lady over there this morning who said, it's so delightful to see these children liking books, because, you know, the library's full of children. And it's better than TV, she said. And I go, yes, that's right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yes. Beautiful for the creative mind, and just to go into a place of imagination, which, you know, is superior when you can't compare books and TV. But I'm biased, of course. Anyway, yeah, and so just very, very briefly, we've got New Zealand Book Month for the whole of October, and the radio station's quite involved as well. We've got the whole island is reading one book. We've called it One Island, One Book. And get your copy from the library, buy it from Take Note or Tivoli, borrow it from a friend. And we're all reading Sonata for Miriam by Linda Olsen, and we've chosen it because we think most people will like it, guys and girls, and men and women. It's an adult thing. And we are, so it's on the radio every day at 22:12. It's going to be read each day in October. And, yeah, it's the author's Linda Olsen. I don't know whether I said that.
And the title again?
Sonata for Miriam. And it's been quite delightful that we've chosen that, because the story starts on Waiheke, and also there was a sonata created for the book, which is really special. So we're trying to get as many people as possible to read it over that month, and then we're going to have a really cool, huge book discussion, like a big book club at Lazy Lounge to discuss, you know, it's like a typical book club thing. You kind of critique the book and discuss and have diverse opinions, and we're going to have live the sonata played live. So yeah, get into New Zealand Book Month on Waiheke. It's national, of course, but we've hooked into it in quite a big way.
That sounds like a brilliant idea. Linda Olsen, is she a local?
She actually is Swedish, because it's Olsson, but she now lives on the North Shore, and we really would have loved to have her involved, but she's unfortunately in Europe for September and October. So,
Maybe we can get her over later in the year.
Yes, yeah. So she's chuffed, of course, that we've picked her book, and lots of people have read it already, but pass the word on about One Island, One Book, and then the event on the 29th is One Island, One Book, One Dialogue, where we all meet at the Lazy Lounge, and, it's going to be advertised on TVNZ all for the whole month of October as well. We've been one of the lucky ones chosen to have our events on the TV screen. So.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
What time will that be on the 29th?
7 till 9. Yeah, we've got Grant Bridger.
7 p.m. till 9.
Yes.
And it's a Saturday, is it?
No, it's a Thursday night,
it's
actually.
It's a Thursday night.
Yeah,
night.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So everybody that's read it, we'd just like them to come along and be involved and you know, have put forward their opinions about what they liked and didn't like. And
That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, it's been great.
And it will stimulate, maybe stimulate some book clubs and things on the island.
It was interesting because I knew of three book clubs, including our library one, and then it's like you know, with my networking and trying to get the word out there, I discovered another three or four. I go, oh, gosh, there's lots.
Oh, that's great.
Which is great. So it's neat for me to network and connect and, you know, get to know more people and involve as many people as I can in the whole One Island, One Book. So, you know, people on the ferry, and we've got posters going up everywhere, and there's bookmarks, and yeah.
That's brilliant.
It'll be good. The main story is going to be in the Gulf News next week.
Right.
And actually next Thursday on Waiheke Radio, Emma, on Thursday evening, we'll be talking about it as well.
Great.
So you can't miss.
That's good.
You can't miss New Zealand Book Month.
That's great. Now, with Adult Learners Week just concluded and interest generated in books and learning, there could be people out there who don't belong to the library who would like to join. Is it difficult to do that? Is it expensive? Yeah. How do you go about it?
It's free to join, and you can do it online. The first step, you can do it at home on your computer. On the main homepage, there's a little link where it says join the library. Click on that, fill in the form. Now you'll get a 7-digit number from that, and you bring that in, and then with your photographic ID and proof of address, like a telecom bill or a, you know, something that shows that you know whatever came in your mailbox is you. And really easy. When you get to the library, it's about 2 minutes, and you've got your library card, and you can start borrowing.
Now, what website do we go to do that?
AucklandCityLibraries.com.
So it's all one word, Auckland City Libraries. R-I-E-S.
Yep.
.com. Okay, that's
love
great.
To have more members. We've got over 50% of the community being members now, but of course we'd like a lot more.
But also, of course, if you don't have a computer, you can just go into the library and fill out a form there.
Yeah, we have the website up constantly, so yeah, you do have the option of coming in, of course.
Right.
And if you're not computer literate, that doesn't matter at all. We will do it for you.
Ah, that's brilliant.
Yeah, so.
So does that mean when you say you've got to bring in a, you know, something with your address on it, does that mean you have to be a ratepayer?
You either buy through your rent or through owning a property. Yeah, you have to be kind of living here more than, you know, permanently more than 6 months, or know that you are going to be a permanent resident.
Right.
Because we have lots of new people joining, you know, they've just come to live on the island.
Right.
So they come in the next day or within the week. Got to join the library, one of the first things they do.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
But of course, if you've got a holiday home here, you can join in Auckland and use your card.
Yes.
Still use your card here.
Oh, yeah. Because no matter where you live, we have a lot of overseas people that come here for the summer. Number two, and because they own a house, they are quite active members of the library too.
Mm, yeah. Great.
Mm.
Well, that's really good talking to you, Di, and we wish you luck for the New Zealand Book Month.
Mm.
And if you've got littlies and you're wondering what to do with them of a morning, bring them along to the library on a Tuesday or Thursday at 10 o'clock for the story time.
Yep, kia ora.
Sounds great. I wish I was young enough to come along. Sounds good.
Lots of grandmas come with their grandchildren or their... Anyway, thank you for having me.
A pleasure.
Cheers.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke People, Events and Issues, brought to you by Island, Art, Craft, Giftware, Clothing and Bric-a-Brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
Now it's my pleasure to introduce Don Robertson, who I think is the chair, is that right, Don, of the Hauraki Gulf Charitable Trust.
That's right, indeed I am.
Right, tell us something about the trust.
Well, the Trust has been really active on the island for the last 5 years since we got a new group of trustees on board, of which I became the chairman, and now we've sort of fleshed that out with some very interesting, talented local people like Kate Hastings, Chris Palmer, Tony King-Turner, Ruth Foreman. So we've got a really good group of active trustees.
That's great. When was the Trust set up?
The Trust was set up probably about 10 years ago in Auckland with the mission to look after environmental projects throughout the whole Hauraki Gulf. And then the Trust went into a bit of a decline because the trustees resigned one upon one. And so I got asked to get involved. And so since then, we've really made an effort to focus our energy in Waiheke, where we think we can see the work, and we can't rush off the Great Barrier and achieve all sorts of amazing things over there. So we've focused on Waiheke.
Great. So is this a Waiheke branch of the Trust, or is the Trust sort of moved to Waiheke?
The Trust has moved to Waiheke, basically.
Fair enough. That's great. I noticed in the marketplace this week that you got a particular concern about the way that roadworks are being done on the island.
Yes, yeah, we're interested in all sorts of aspects of, you know, the conservation in Waiheke Island. After all, it's a beautiful place to live. We're very fortunate to live here. So Kate and Tony King-Turner took a submission to the council over the roadworks and the way that the new formation of curb and channelling is not actually what's needed on this island.
Yes, it seems to be that they've got an attitude of one size fits all, and you know, they can do on the island what they do in town. It doesn't necessarily work that way, does it?
No, not at all. And I think that when you get runoffs, washaways, slips like we had at the Mackenzie Reserve, you start to realise that you've got to treat the environment here different than you do in the city.
Mm. What sort of reaction have you had from the powers that be on that?
I didn't go to that hearing, so, and I think Kate told me the other day that we're still waiting for a result, but the reaction has been positive, for sure.
Right. Yes, I would think the community board would be in behind it.
Yes, yeah, the community board are very constructive and listen to a lot of the things that go on, so we'll wait until, I think they've got to have another meeting to follow this up.
Right. There has also been some concern expressed that the roadworks and that those types of works have been done without consultation of the locals and without any sort of priority setting by the locals of what they want done and where. Is that of concern to you?
Yes, I think that the governance of a place like Waiheke is rather different, even though it comes under the umbrella of the Auckland City. And as we know, from everything from wheelie bins onwards, it's just a different place and we have to look at it differently.
Mm, yeah. You've had a long association with conservation, haven't you?
Yes, yeah, I was involved with Peter Blake during the time of Blake expeditions, which was all really about the environment and taking care of the environment. I think the simple message is that if you look at Waiheke Island, it's an absolutely gorgeous place to live and be part of, and so that anything you can do to enhance that in a man-made way with, say, tree planting and that kind of thing is good.
Yeah. What sort of things would you like to see us do now?
We're interested in talking to any small community groups that are interested in enhancing the environment where they live. For argument's sake, we've been working for years with the group called the Friends of Mackenzie Reserve, which is a reserve over in Closure Bay, where a group of local people there, led by Penny Erickson primarily, took up the cudgels to clear all the pine trees off that reserve and plant it in native trees. And they had all the enthusiasm, but not perhaps the wherewithal to raise the money. And so they came to us because we're a charitable trust with a structure and with the ability to go to people like the lotteries or the Auckland Savings Bank charity and ask for funding and provide the proper documentation and follow through for such funds.
So do you act as an umbrella group for the smaller groups like that?
Yes, we do. And we've got more groups coming to us from time to time. We've just got some money from the Department of Conservation to enhance the Te Toki Reserve. We're working on a project in conjunction with the Waiheke High School to look at their wetland project in enhancing and clearing all that wetland at the bottom of the school grounds there. So all round, anywhere in the island, we're quite happy to get involved.
Do you have any particular plans for Conservation Week, things that you're targeting for that week, or is it just business as usual?
Just business as usual. We're pretty busy. Right now we're in the process of a new fundraising round with the lotteries and the Auckland Savings Bank, and that takes quite a bit of administrative time. And we see ourselves basically being able to be the administrators for small groups who don't have any actual structure.
So how do people contact you?
Well, they can call any one of the trustees. Barbara Disley's our secretary, and most of the trustees are pretty well known to local residents. Chris Palmer, Kate Hastings, myself. My phone number is 2900, and we're happy to hear from anybody, or Don Robertson at extra.co.nz. who has a project that would like assistance with funding and providing it fits into the umbrella of what we see we're meant to be doing as a trust, that is conservation and environmental projects, we're happy to see if we can assist. We don't have a great big bucket of money of our own. Our function is to go to the big funding organisations and see if they will support this particular project.
And, of course, you've obviously got the experience and the wherewithal or the knowledge to put a convincing submission together.
Yes, that seems to be where we've developed our expertise. On another issue, we're just planning now, in conjunction with two other local Waiheke charities, the Westpac Rescue Helicopter and the Hospice and ourselves, we're going to have a charity function in January to raise money for those three organisations at one event, and all the money raised will be shared amongst those three charities, and the money that we will get, hopefully, from that event will be then used for discretionary funding to small groups on the island.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I've been pleasantly surprised at the number of initiatives out there that people are doing. I live in Rocky Bay, and there's a group that recently sort of came into the bay, and they've planted some fruit trees in Mary Wilson Park. And the other initiatives with various communities on the island who've developed community gardens, for instance. It's a great idea.
Mm. And I think a lot of these groups are enthusiastic, want to do something, but there is the question of money, and they might only be $2,000 worth of trees that they need. And hopefully with this charity function we're going to have in January, we'll have some discretionary money where we don't have to go to lotteries, because that's a big grant application and they only do two of them a year. So hopefully we'll have a little bit of spare change from this event where we can look at small projects.
Yes. And, of course, the funding from the lotteries and ASB Trust and whatever has reduced too, hasn't it? It's not as abundant as it used to be.
No, unfortunately. We put an application into the Auckland Savings Bank last year, which we didn't get any funds at all, primarily because their investment portfolio had shrunk considerably.
Right.
Not that they didn't think we had a worthwhile project, but they just didn't have the money they used to have.
That's one of the problems, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yes. What have you got in the pipeline? Have you got any projects that you're really working towards?
Not any new ones. We're currently looking to sustain the Mackenzie Reserve, which is a big project. That's been like maybe $100,000 has been poured into that project so far, and it's not finished yet. So we need more funding for that to now finish off the project, basically, in terms of things like signage and tables and chairs and things in the reserve itself. The trees are pretty well there. So we've still got money to raise for that. We've got some money to raise for the school wetland project. There's a little project in the Newton Reserve which we'd like to be able to help, which we tried to raise some money for last year through the savings bank but weren't successful. So we're going to have a look at that again. So we're just continually out there with the projects that we've got. We want to make sure that they go to fruition rather than take on projects and have no hope of helping them.
Right. And in the meantime, you're sort of a watchdog group as well, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, for sure. And people like Tony King Turner, who is a man who's got his hands dirty and he's out there, out and about, so he knows what's happening. And he's a very good man to have on the trust.
Mm. Absolutely. Do you need any helpers at all, or you pretty much?
We're always looking for. We'd actually like anyone who could help, and from an administrative point of view, is quite good at all that sort of, you know, typing, proposal preparation, and those kind of things, because that's where we seem to spend quite a bit of our time, and it's all volunteer work, and it's very hard for us all to spend the time. The proposals are like, you know, 20 or 30 pages thick, so there's quite a bit of work done there. So if anybody's out there who has great secretarial proposal skills, we'd be happy to have you help us.
Right, okay. What sort of time factor would be involved, you know, time commitment would be involved in that?
Well, generally the applications to the major funding bodies are only like twice a year, so we have a hiatus of work for maybe a month. gathering all the necessary material, fact sheets and photographs and things we need. And then we have to wait 4 months for a reply to those applications. So we have a lot of work maybe for 2 or 3 weeks, but not full-time by any means.
No, that sounds great. So if anybody's out there that would like to get involved and help out with typing up applications, contact Don Robertson. And what are we hoping for the outcome with this roadworks thing? Have we got anything, when might we hear from council as to the reaction to the submission?
I think that, from my understanding, because I didn't go actually to that particular meeting, there needs to be a second meeting with the road board representatives from the council to come up with some resolution and hopefully see that what we have discussed and submitted is worth dealing with.
Mm, right. And there's, in the meantime, how can we, is there anything that can be done to lessen the impact of what's happened?
Well, no, I think the council just have to review their way that they are treating the curbing and channelling and water runoff around the island. I think it's over to them to, because we can't control what they do in terms of the roadworks, only can influence their decisions, hopefully.
Mm. I guess we don't know what their plans are either, what's going to happen next, or where they've got their sights set
for
the next lot.
No, we don't. But I have to say, with all the things that are going on, the big Auckland city and all those kind of manoeuvres, and whether Auckland's going to become part of Coromandel or not, all the rest of it, we have a very good working relationship with the community board, which is, I think, all we need to know.
That's excellent. Well, we wish you luck, Don. Thank you very much for coming in.
Good, thank you.
I've been talking to Don Robertson, the chair of the Hauraki Gulf Charitable Trust. Now it's my pleasure to introduce Joan Kirk, who's going to talk to us about the Peace March and the flame, the peace flame that's going to arrive on the island this coming Thursday. Do we know what time it's going to get here, Joan?
Approximately 4 o'clock, Jean.
Okay, now this is pretty exciting, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It must be a big thrill for Mani and Cara to uplift the flame from Bob Harvey at the Waitakere Mayor.
Yes, it will be. They're really quite excited about it.
Mm. Now, it started its journey in Tokyo, is that right? The flame,
yes.
It started its journey in Tokyo. And is coming out here first off. We're the first port of call.
Yes, we are. We're the first port of call. Goes to the Glen Eyre Intermediate School.
Right.
And then it will be handed to Mani and Kip from there.
Right, and then they're bringing it to Waiheke Island.
Yes, they are. We're not too sure whether it's lit at that stage.
Oh, let's hope it hasn't gone out. Be a bit of a worry if it had gone out. So where will they be bringing it to?
It will arrive by barge on Thursday, approximately 4.
Right, so they're coming into Kennedy Point.
Into Kennedy Point, but then it will be taken to the peace tent.
Which will be
where Woolworths will eventually be built.
So on that vacant land beside the rocks.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, and you've got a peace tent being set up there. When does that go up?
The peace tent goes up on the 16th. It will be there till the 27th. And
great.
There's a vigil there for the flame.
Right.
For that amount of time.
So will the flame be there all the time?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. And when does it head off to the rest of the country?
The 27th, it goes over to Auckland.
And then it goes through New Zealand.
Through New Zealand.
Wow, so we're very privileged to have it for that length of time, aren't we? That's great.
We have to look after it.
Yes, indeed.
So we look lots of people coming to see us camping in the middle of winter in a tent.
It's springtime now. It's going to be warmer, surely.
We hope so.
Yes. Now, this your peace group is just a group of friends that got together and decided to do this?
Yes, it was. We were all asked fairly harshly if we would join it, and we said, yes, we'll give you a hand.
Okay.
So we had no other name, so we called it the peace group.
So who was the motivator behind
it?
Oh, right, right. That's great. And the walk, was that a local initiative?
Yes, that was another skate initiative.
Right, that's terrific. Now, what date is that happening?
It happens on the 20th of September, which is Sunday week.
And you'll be leaving from the tent?
No, we'd be leaving from the Peace Rock, which is just across the road.
Oh, from
Rockeriti and Belgium Street.
Yeah, by the motel there.
Well, I suspect if there's many people that say they're coming there, we will be all over the place at Ostend.
And what time does it start?
It starts at 11, but we would like everyone there to be there by 10 so we can get people, you know, organised with the entertainment and all that sort of thing.
So what's going to be happening?
We've got some youngsters who are playing flute that are in the parade. We've got Sister Shout and the boys' group choir, which I'm a bit unsure about. They're singing at the beginning, also at the end. And drummers, banners, very colourful, quite a lot, and little ones on decorated bikes, and just a real family occasion, really, we hope.
That sounds pretty good. Yeah. And you're finishing up in Ellison Park?
Yes, we are. We're going via Surfdale, Blackpool, past the Marae, up to Ellison Park, around the back way. So if people can join in wherever they
Anywhere along the line.
Yeah, they can. And we also have got vans for those who are finding it a bit tough. We can take them up the hill in the van and drop them off on the flat and pick them up again and that sort of thing. So we've got all
great.
That under control.
Excellent. And the purpose of the march is to commemorate Hiroshima Day, is that right?
No, it's the purpose of this march was to commemorate Gandhi's birthday, which was the first thing, and Hiroshima Day as well. It's an overall peace worldwide thing, and they're all trying to see what will happen with it. Never been done before.
No.
I noticed that they said there had been a world peace march in America before, but it was only America, a bit like the World Series of, you know, whatever they play, baseball, when it's only Americans in it. Same sort of thing. So it is the first one that they're doing in 90 countries.
And who initiated it?
Oh,
yeah, was that sort of an international peace group?
Yes, it's the glass. I can't see. Yeah, there's a lot of reading to do, Jan.
Right, fair enough. That's okay. Is it up to each community to decide how they commemorate this?
No, we were asked because we have a lot of very, the original peace workers on the island, really, and as Mani and Kara, at 90, they've got to be some of the oldest peace workers anywhere, really. And a lot of others, the Rainbow Warrior connections, the nuclear connections, you know, we've got so many on the island that we're different.
And our march will reflect that, obviously.
Yes.
Well, it's not so much a march as a walk.
No, we're calling it a walk. It's a walk. It is a world peace march, but we didn't like that term, so we've made it into a walk.
It sounds a bit military, doesn't it? Yes.
It does.
Yes, no. So it's a nice Waiheke stroll.
It's the one.
What a good idea. And with the participation of the children and the music. It'll be a very colourful. And
well, there's a lot of entertainment up at the Morrow Hall when it finishes as well.
And you've got refreshment stations sort of all the way? Or?
Pass, I'm not on that one.
Okay.
No.
I presume we do.
Down.
I think in the Gulf News it says that there will be a refreshment stop at at Surfdale.
Yes.
Yeah. And just in case at the Surfdale Reserve. So, there'll be...
And we would all, you know, make sure people bought their own drinks and things like that. So
yeah, take your own bottle of water and make sure you don't get dehydrated.
Mm.
Yeah. But it'll be a fun way to get some exercise.
It will be.
And
I'm sneaky. I actually chose to drive the van.
Yeah, well, that's your prerogative. It's one of the organisers. Why
it's
not?
True.
Yeah. But now, if people are interested, do they need to contact somebody or do they just turn up on the day?
Just turn up on the day at 10 o'clock.
Right. And with regard to the tent, people can just wander in.
We'd love to have people wandering in because we're there for 10 days.
Anytime.
Right. Anytime, day or night. Night's probably preferable to.
And that starts.
And they can bring their own bedding and join us.
Right.
Which will be a bit of fun.
Yes.
Guitars
indeed.
Would be welcome.
Yes, great. And when you're starting that on Thursday, is it?
On the 17th.
That's Thursday
coming.
Right.
Yep.
What time?
sort of, was it, they're putting it up in the morning?
Going up Wednesday.
Okay. Do they need a hand to put it up, or you've got
no, I think that they've got enough. The man who owns it apparently said that there is people that will be willing.
Because it's quite a colourful
I have no idea what it's like.
It's not
sounds
run-of-the-mill.
Like a bit of fun. No, yeah. Someone said something like a Moroccan tent or
yes,
something.
Yes, sounds great.
I did hear it was a teepee as well, so I'm not really sure.
A Moroccan teepee. Oh, well, why not? now, the banner. You've got the original. Is that the original banner was made from?
Yes,
it is. It's painted onto wood, and yeah. It's just beautiful, isn't it?
And they have Waiheke World Peace Walk on the top
right.
of it now on the banner. The banner's amazing.
Yeah, there's a colour photo in the latest Gulf News of the banner. And it was Ellie Anderson, wasn't
yeah.
it? Ellie Anderson?
Ellie.
It says Anderson and the
Ellie Arch, it is.
Oh, Ellie Arch, yeah. Right. And she's painted that and come up with the design. Right.
And we had Stu Galvin who did the actual artwork onto vinyl.
Who made
from Pukeka Graphics.
Oh, okay. So that's on vinyl.
Mm.
Right.
So that's going through in the 90 countries, which is fairly exciting.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So how is that working?
Well,
it's accompanying the flame.
Mm.
Oh, brilliant.
Mm.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so it will be handed over to whoever takes the flame and they'll take the banner.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
That's right.
That's really going to get us on the map. Mm.
We also have other banners that people have made. And we will hope they're making them in the tent.
Right.
Between Thursday and Sunday.
Yes,
as well.
So you can carry your banner.
Carry your own banner or ribbon or whatever.
Mm. Mm. Yeah,
sounds
great.
It'll be a bit of fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what is your group got anything planned in the future apart from this?
No.
Not at this stage?
No.
You'll be recovering from it?
Yes.
Yes. Well, I mean, Waiheke has always been at the forefront of the peace movement, as you say. I mean, when you think of Greenham Common and
Walk Across America.
Mururoa and yes. Mm. And,
that's right.
We've got lots of people who are very aware of the peace thing, and we certainly won't lose track of it on the island.
Oh, no, never.
No.
I mean, there is people out there that are still in a different branch, if you like, of it, the peace groups on the island. So they're still there.
That's great.
Mm.
Yeah, well, we wish you luck.
Thank you.
And everybody come along to the peace walk. On the, what date was it again?
20th.
I've just lost my place here. The 20th of
September.
And walk from Ostend to Alison Park or meet up with the walkers anywhere along that route. And you'd be most welcome. And also, don't forget to pop in and say hi to the diehards who are going to be living in the Moroccan tent from this coming Thursday. They'd love to see you. Thanks, Joan, for coming in, and best of luck with all of this.
Yes, thanks very much, Jean.
Okay. It's now my very great pleasure to welcome Dr. Margaret Karatai. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning, Jan.
Now, spring is in the air, and that means for a lot of people hay fever and asthma. And I understand that we have got quite a bad reputation on the island for those sorts of things.
We do. It's climate related, and we have a wonderful climate, and my particular personal allergy is to grass. So I think there's only about 2 weeks in the year where there isn't some grass releasing its pollen on Waiheke.
Oh, my goodness.
So it doesn't seem to be seasonal for a lot of people either, even if you're in an outside grass allergy type area. So the commonest allergy would be grass, and I think pine. People always talk about privet, don't they? And I'm sure some people are allergic to privet. But pine allergy seems to be much more extensive, and that's the one that we've had in the last few months. Huge amount of pollen from pine trees.
So you've noticed an increase in patients coming in with those sorts of allergies?
Huge in the last month, and people having sinus infections, which are often based on allergy, that they really didn't even know that they had.
Is there anything we can do to prevent this these sort of allergies? Or is it?
Absolutely. Now, where would you like me to start?
Uh-huh.
Would you like me to start when you're born?
Oh, right.
Or in utero? Or just from a month-to-month prevention
business? I'll leave that to your discretion.
Well, I think it's fascinating, the subject of allergy. And when you first asked me, because there's been huge advances in the knowledge about allergy, and a lot of what I was taught at medical school 28 plus years ago is now out of date, and they've rethought things. So stuff that I thought was gospel is now being thrown out. It's so complicated that much of what we say is actually a simplification of what allergy is. So you really need to speak to a super, super allergy specialist. And I had the opportunity to speak to one about 10 years ago, so it's probably already out of date. And I was speaking to him because I came across a person who seemed to be allergic to exercise. And I thought, well, that's bizarre. I had never heard of anyone being allergic to exercise. And indeed, he was a sports person. And so there was some chemical that he produced when he was exercising that made him have an anaphylaxis reaction, which, of course, is the worst degree of allergy. So going back, where shall I start? Let's start with what allergy is, and it varies from person to person, and you will speak to some families who have a lot of allergy in their family and other families who have no allergy in their family, and then there's the people in between. And allergy is where the body, we generally regard it as where the body has a reaction to something that's actually quite innocent, and we would prefer not to react to it, like grass pollen, for example. There's no advantage. Well, there kind of is. If we were to inhale a lot of grass, it would destroy our lungs, so it makes sense to sort of cough it up. Mm. And that's what happens with allergy. As you cough, you produce mucus, you get swelling of the passages, you get irritation on the skin. They're all designed to get rid of these complex proteins, and that's what we're allergic to. It's the complex protein in whatever it is that we're reacting to. I'm getting too complicated, aren't I?
Well, if that's the case, is there something we can do to that we can take, that we can eat, whatever, to help lessen that?
Well, it's more important to talk about what we do know. What we do know is that if your body is in an allergic state, say you have a cold. So when we have a cold, we are having an allergy reaction to the virus protein, if you like. And that makes it an advantage for that virus to keep going, because we produce a lot of mucus, so we release more of that virus so someone else catches it and that virus continues to live. So perhaps there's a grass pollen or something that is very similar protein to that virus. We then react to that grass pollen, even though it's not the virus we're reacting to.
Okay.
And there might be someone else who doesn't react to that cold, and they would say, I never catch a cold. They probably do. They just don't have the allergy reaction to it.
Mm, right. Now, what about an allergy where your skin breaks out?
Mm-hmm.
It's through, perhaps that can be is that a similar sort of thing or not? Different?
No, that's very, very similar, and that's where I sort of want to go back to your first question, which was why we develop allergy. I remember being taught at medical school, we never use penicillin on the skin. And the reason we do that is because if we did use penicillin on the skin, everyone would become allergic to it. So the skin is our barrier to the outside world, and I think the main reason we have so many allergies now, and it is increasing, is because we use far too much soap and we take far too much grease off our skin as children. And, of course, I can remember as a child rolling in the grass and being on those sort of cardboard things and skimming down grass banks and things like that. And you end up with dirt and grass pollen and all sorts of thing on your skin. And what happens when you go home? You go in the bath, you get some soap, and you scrub all this protein off, but what you're actually doing is you're taking away the grease of your skin and shoving that complex protein into your skin, which your body then recognises as a foreigner. So what we should not be using is soap, but there's money in soap.
Oh, yes, and beauty products in general.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And if you are a seller of soap and you want to make a profit, the best thing you can do is stand up and say, look, you've got to scrub yourself with soap every day. And best thing you can do is have a beautiful girl on TV with lots and lots of soap bubbles all over her so that your product gets used 10 times as much as it should be used, and you make more profit.
Oh, absolutely. And there seems to have been a trend over the last 20, 30 years of perhaps an excess of cleanliness, your daily showers.
I think so.
Which wasn't the case, I can't recall it being the case when I was a child, for instance.
No, it's marketing on TV, isn't it?
Mm.
And it works.
Yes. Yes, it does work, but it's obviously taking a lot of the.
It's creating more allergies.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And there's no question about it. The first barrier we have is the oil that we produce on our skin, and it makes a lot more sense that we use oil to or a natural oil or something like that to make our skin clean.
Mm. I've got a girlfriend who now is in her early 70s, and she's always used olive oil.
Absolutely. Good idea.
Just water and olive oil. She's got amazing skin. Mm.
And you see that in Tahiti too, where they use coconut oil, and that's all they use in their hair as well.
Mm.
And hair will not go, head lice will not go on hair that has oil on it.
Oh, right.
They just don't like it. They like their hair to be clean and fluffy and like the Europeans wear it.
Right, and that's something of a misunderstanding that people have too about head lice. They seem to think that it's dirty hair, that your hair's dirty if you've got head lice. And it's the opposite, isn't it?
Mm, it's the clean, fluffy hair.
Yeah.
And some people aren't allergic to head lice. So you will hear people say, well, I never get head lice. And they may have it. They just don't have a reaction to it.
Oh, okay. Well, this is the thing too, isn't it? There's a lot of things in the body that can lie dormant, and you never know they're there.
Mm.
It can just sometimes be triggered by circumstances.
And, yeah. Head lice don't do well if you brush your hair 3 or 4 times a day either. So people with lots and lots of thick hair will often brush their hair 3 or 4 times a day. I can't do that with my hair. It's so fine. It'll all fall out if I brushed my hair, even using a hairbrush. I use one of those sort of 3-prong comb things and carefully so that I still have hair left.
Mm.
So people that brush their hair tend to sort of, they say they break the legs of the head lice. The head lice don't do well, but there'll always be 1 or 2 really big ones that will run to the other side of the head and be very good at running away from the hairbrush.
Uh-huh.
But right. We're talking about head lice, not allergies now, are we?
Yes. Yeah, well,
in terms of the treatment of spring allergies, you wanted to know, didn't you?
Yeah, what can we do to lessen the impact of spring on those of us who suffer allergies?
Well, I don't like decongestants as a drug, and you see that in all the cold and cough mixtures that you buy, or allergy, or day, whatever they call them, day and night seasonal stuff. I don't like the decongestants because they make the mucus thicker. And I think if it makes it thicker, it's more likely to sort of block up in sinus passages. You've got these big sinuses and you've got the middle ear, which have tiny wee tubes that drain into the nose. And these cavities are there so our head's not too heavy, and they're there for various reasons. Well, they're not there for any reasons. It's just part of who we are. They're lined with a mucous membrane. And when that drainage gets blocked, you get a negative pressure inside the sinus, and if it stays blocked for long enough, it gets filled up with glue, we call it, or snot, if you like. It's just like a glue ear. We call it glue ear. It's similar in the sinuses, blocked sinuses. And then, of course, a bacteria goes up there and you get infection and you come in with your sinusitis. Mm. So not everybody with allergy gets the sneezing. Some people just get the congestion, the swelling. Not everyone gets the clear, runny nose. Some people just get the congestion or just get the sneezing. And that's a combination of all three. Mm. I'm one that gets all three. The other drug that's used is antihistamines, which I don't like particularly either, although I do resort to them if I get caught short. I use an antihistamine eye drop frequently because it's very awful to have allergy in your eyes. A lot of the time, eye drops don't work because people don't use them properly. They should be sort of put on the outside corner of the eye, or they don't like the idea of putting anything in their eye, and it can be quite irritating. It can be a bit cold, but antihistamine eye drops. And there's also another drug called sodium chromoglycate. It's a mast cell stabilizer, and that the mast cell is the cell that creates the allergy. So there are drugs that will stabilize those cells and stop the allergy from happening. I think that's a brilliant way of treating it. The other big drug that we've got is the steroid drugs, which if used properly are absolutely brilliant. And that's with the nose spray, and that's the best way to treat allergies. But again, most people don't use them properly.
Mm. That is a problem, isn't it? Yeah. Look, I'm sorry, Margaret, we're going to have to wind up. We've run out of time. Sophie Jo is pacing the floor out there, and it's been really interesting.
Thank you very much.
We must do it again sometime. Thank you. We've been talking to Dr. Margaret Karatai.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekiradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.